If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We regularly invite all members of Congress who represent Iowa and Washington to join us here on River to River to share their views on a variety of issues in the news. This first half hour, U.S. Senator Charles Grassley returns to the program. Because of the senator's schedule, he couldn't join us live at noon. However, we are so grateful he made time for us to go into a studio in the Capitol and record a conversation earlier today. Senator Grassley, welcome back to our program.
I'm glad to be with River to River, and I'm sorry you probably invite me more often than I appear, but whenever I can, I'll take advantage of it because I appreciate the opportunity through public radio of communicating with my constituents.
Well, thank you for those kind words, and we will indeed keep inviting you back. Even though we're not live this time, Senator Grassley, we've asked our listeners for questions over the weekend via media, social media, and email, and I'll be adding some of those in our conversation as time permits. We had a number of emails about gun violence, of course, very much on the minds of our listeners as after the recent spate of mass shootings. And the Gun Violence Archive, a nonprofit group that tracks gun violence here in the U.S., found that more than 19,000 people died in gun homicides last year. That's the most in more than two decades. Let me start off with an email from one of our listeners, Brent, sent in. Brent writes, "Gun deaths are clearly a problem in the USA. Republican members of Congress often indicate they want to respond to the problem, but with solutions that will work. All the proposals made by Democrats are rejected by the Republican Party. Thus, it seems the Republican Party is responsible for proposing solutions. What are you proposing?" Brent asked that question.
Sure. I'm glad to talk about what I'm proposing before I get to one or two issues that I would sponsor or go along with. First of all, we all have to realize gun violence is wrong. And I wish Congresswoman Waters of California over the weekend would not say that we have to have more confrontation. And I wish that we would spend more time talking about the violence that happens every weekend in Chicago so that we would get out how much there really is and the extent to which Chicago already has a lot of laws against guns and yet they still have overwhelming number of guns in that community. So I would like to speak, first of all, that one reason you find a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, is because for the last 15 years, it's pretty clear the Supreme Court decisions on the Second Amendment of the personal constitutional right for people to bear arms. So constitutional protection is very important. So I would highlight just one of my bills if you want to follow up with others, but it would be called the EAGLES Act. And EAGLES is an acronym, but quite frankly, it speaks to the Parkland shooting in Florida and something that we learned from there, that if it was carried out, less people that have mental illness would have guns, and they'd be in the FBI files, and they couldn't buy a gun legally like this person did that killed 13, 14 people. EAGLES is the mascot of the Parkland High School. That's where the act comes from. And it builds on a very successful program that the Secret Service has had for a few decades to train people to be alert to people that would determine somebody might be a threat to themselves or to society with or without a gun. And it would extend what the Secret Service has been doing probably mostly for law enforcement people to teachers to train them to be recognized, because this person that did the killing in Washington was recognized dozens, well, when I say dozens of times, I better say 30 to 40 times. And if he had been referred to somebody to give him mental health, then this Parkland thing would not have happened.
Can you tell us, President Biden had a list of actions that he was taking on his own, including curbing the spread of these so-called ghost guns, pressing for red flag laws, similar to what I think you just described, and boosting community interventions. Do you support the president's unilateral action and executive action in place of what seems to be something that Congress just really can't get done, can't agree on?
Well, if in fact the president wants a sale of that gun to be reported based upon the fact that I think existing law would make sure that that would have to go through the background check. But for the person to buy the equipment to put together as a gun, it seems to me for that personal use, there's no violation of any law. But if that person's going to sell that gun, then the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of our listeners, Sharon in Mount Vernon, wants your reaction here. Part of her email, it's rather lengthy, but going back to your earlier comment about the 2008 Supreme Court decision on guns, writing for the majority, she says, Justice Scalia said the Second Amendment right to arms is not unlimited. Quoting Scalia, this is from her email, the right is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. And then Sharon, you know, I think you already said reasonable limits, she's asking that you would suggest. Yeah. Do you, let me just follow up with that. Do you see gun legislation, bipartisan legislation being passed in the near future? If so, which ones?
Well, it'd be all, well, first of all, let's get back to Scalia's determination, because even historically, he was accurate in saying that, because, you know, since the 1930s, there's at least been a prohibition against what we call submachine guns being owned by individuals. Mm-hmm. And so, and several states have taken advantage of Scalia's thing. So I'm not going to tell 50 states what they should do or not do. So I'm going to accept Scalia's decision that states may pass legislation that may pass the constitutional test or not. And the court has avoided in two or three instances in the last 3 or 4 years making a decision on certain things like that because they didn't feel that it was a big enough issue to bring before the courts. So we will find out over the next several decades the extent to which some state prohibitions or restrictions are constitutional or not. So I'm willing to do that. So what we would do is, in a bipartisan way to answer the constituent's question, is that we would work to fix the what's called the NICS program, I-N-I-C-S, but that I'd rather refer to it as the FBI program, where you prohibit certain gun ownership by criminals and dangerous people, people with mental health, people, domestic issue, domestic abuse issues, things of that nature. And then there's proposals that I think are reasonable. I haven't made up my mind if I'd vote for it, mm-hmm. but to cover also domestic partners as one, because if you're married and you got a court order to stay away, obviously that's already covered by law. But there's also an issue with domestic partners. If they should be denied guns because they're a threat to another partner.
If you've just joined us, U.S. Senator Charles Grassley joining me. This conversation recorded earlier today. Senator Grassley in a studio in the Capitol. Let's move on. So many other things to cover, other listener questions here. Of course, COVID, our big concern over the past year, Senator. Studies show that up to 45% of Republicans would not take the COVID vaccine. What are you doing to convince Republicans this is not only a good for individuals, but also a good for our society, that Would you say, for instance, that getting vaccinated is the patriotic thing to do for the common good?
Well, I don't think it has to be patriotic so much as medicinal or health-wise. I would take advantage of this program to tell anybody who's listening that they should get the vaccination. I would say that I have done that myself because I didn't take the vaccine right away when it was available to members of Congress in December because I had had COVID and I think I had immunity, maybe still have that immunity, but I did get my two shots during the month of February. Mm-hmm. So what more can you do except just as a public official saying it's a wise thing to do?
Right. Perhaps a bit of an explanation. And by the way, I hope you're feeling well.
Yeah, I am.
Very good. Just to bring out a point, I think Dr. Fauci brought out on the weekend, our nation's infectious disease expert, perhaps you can explain what he pointed out as a paradox, that on the one hand, Republicans, according to polls, want to be relieved of the restrictions, but on the other hand, they don't want to get vaccinated. And he said that almost doesn't make sense. Can you explain that? Do you understand that? Well, how the path to having fewer restrictions is through vaccination, and yet you have Republicans, a large number, who do not want to take the vaccine?
Well, you've mentioned Republicans so often. You ought to bring up that a large share of the African-American population is probably more prone to not trust the government on this issue because there's historical reasons why maybe they can't. So the African-American community and the medicine community of African-Americans, particularly doctors and ministers, are urging African-Americans to do it. So I think you're putting too much emphasis upon the politics of it.
Well, you're a Republican, so that's why I'm asking you, and you're a Republican leader of our nation. That's why I'm asking you to give us a sense of what these poll numbers indicate.
Well, didn't I just do that by saying that public officials like me set an example, and I've given my example? But you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Okay. Let's go on to an agricultural issue, if we could, Senator Grassley. The current agricultural secretary, Tom Vilsack, has spoken about paying farmers for climate-smart farming by creating a federal carbon bank. He says the USDA could pay farmers through the Commodity Credit Corporation. That's the USDA's bank. The question here, does the USDA have the authority to pay farmers for so-called climate-smart farming through this Commodity Credit Corporation?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of the taxpayers paying the farmers to do it. It's a matter of combining, hooking up farmers with people that are polluting, that would rather pay for their pollution and give credits to farmers, so they would pay to farmers for certain credits that would take care of whatever they're polluting. And I think that that maybe the Secretary of Agriculture has some authority to do that. He at least can do it through his leadership without necessarily having a specific law. But if there isn't enough law, I'm a co-sponsor of a that's Senator Braun of Indiana, bipartisan bill that would set up procedures and direction to the Secretary of Agriculture to help farmers do this and get rewarded for it. The only thing that has come up for me to consider as a farmer and representing farmers is the fact that for decades, if you recognize the terms no-till, minimum-till, cover crops, there's been some farmers that have been doing this for decades. And shouldn't they be rewarded some way with what they've already been doing? The Paris Peace Accord says that only future actions that people take that might cut down on global warming should be honored. That doesn't necessarily mean anything because the Paris Peace Accord has no enforcement. It's a moral standard that nations are supposed to follow. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can ignore what the Paris Peace Accords say, but it seems to me like they're not willing to give farmers that have done things in the past to incorporate carbon, and that's what minimum tillage, no tillage, and cover crops, and there's probably 100 other things that I ought to know about to mention that where farmers are already doing good practices to cut down and incorporate carbon.
So you think, whether it's the past or into the future, that the federal government should be involved in a larger scale effort to pay farmers for practices that remove carbon from the air and store it in the soil?
Yes, and I suppose that you would say that farmers have already been through CRP, been doing some of that. But anyway, let's get back to the basics. The government is, most of the benefit of what you're asking me about is going to come from the government encouraging procedures and also to set up an arrangement where the private sector polluters can be arrange processes through the from farmers to incorporate that, and farmers get credit for it and get paid for it by private sector people.
Let me share this related email on an ag topic from one of our listeners. Sam sent in his email on the weekend. He writes, why must we Iowans continue to bear the cost for farmers' runoff? Should they not be held liable for cleaning up our waterways after it was their product that's poisoning all our wells and freshwater sources? Yeah. That is the question from Sam in an email.
Yeah. Well, I hope that Sam realizes that if it rains 10 inches, that may be a little hard. Let's say 5 to 7 inches at a particular location, and the ground can't absorb that, then is that farmer responsible for something that God decided to do at a particular time? Now, that same farmer, if he's close to watersheds, can put strips along the creek to help maintain some of that, but maybe that doesn't do it totally. So I think that he's pretty harsh on 2% of the people that produce food for the other 98%. That's important for social stability, so you don't have riots on people not being able to buy food when they need it, and also for national security reasons. So I think that I would ask him to be just a little bit more what farmers can control or not control. What we control, we ought to control, but what we can't control, we shouldn't be blamed for.
You have, Senator, been outspoken about the relationship between big tech companies and people's right to free speech. You've argued that these tech platforms of Facebook and Twitter, of course, everyone knows you're a big presence on Twitter, that these companies are censoring conservative voices and acting as, in your words, big brothers, and that these platforms are now the new public square. Why do you think private companies should not be allowed to make their own content policies and choose what is and is not allowed on their platform?
First of all, it's censoring anything, whether it's conservative, liberal, or middle of the road, or anything else. It doesn't take into consideration the discretion of American people to make a judgment of what they ought to believe or not believe. Then the point is that they're protected by no lawsuits based on a 1996 law that Congress passed that said these platforms can't be sued. And remember, in 1996, there was no Google, Facebook, Twitter, or anything else that I can remember at that particular time. They now become a monopoly. They shouldn't be insulated against lawsuit. So let's just do away with Section 230 that provides them that protection. Let them be the same as newspapers. Can be sued or not sued based upon what a jury decides.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you call them monopolies? Do you think these companies have monopoly power and it should be broken up just like the big oil companies in the early 20th century?
I don't know whether I want to go that far right now to say broken up, but it isn't just Chuck Grassley that has this views. The FTC has sued Google There was a settlement there. They're in the process of suing some other people now. There's some legislation in that's very important that would look into this. And there would be very important legislation by Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota, that I'm I think I'm going to help her get some antitrust legislation passed that might affect them, not for the past, but in the future, mergers and things like that. Because they just have such monopoly power, they can buy up almost anything they want and expand their influence way beyond what was ever intended in 1996.
Hopefully get to a couple more points in the few minutes we have left, Senator Grassley. This email from Dave, one of our listeners. Former President George Bush said last week, Dave writes, a nation that is willing to accept the refugee or the harmed or the frightened, to me, is a great nation, and we are a great nation. And then Dave asks, do you have second thoughts about using the word babysitting to describe helping children who have fled poverty and violence in Central America? A little background there. You have defended Governor Reynolds' rejection of a federal request to accept migrant children in Iowa when she said finding homes for them is the president's problem. You backed her up, I believe, by saying we don't have the resources for babysitting migrant children.
Yeah. First of all, 2 weeks ago, I went to the border, so I saw the crisis firsthand. It's a humanitarian crisis, a public health crisis. I'd call it even a national security problem. And when you have 841 people with criminal records crossing the border, it's a law enforcement problem. And I think that any nation ought to secure its borders, and ours obviously aren't secured at this point. We can't go to any other country without their permission to get into that country, so people should have to have our permission to come to this country. And we're very welcoming in that regard. We take a million people legally every year. So in regard to what Governor Reynolds said, and after I asked her for some information on her position, I learned more about what the federal government is asking Iowa to do and the Iowa Department of Homeland Security do. The governor says that Iowa is not equipped to handle the type of people she wants, where we have, ever since Governor Ray, been very welcoming to refugees. We don't have the infrastructure resources in place to handle the type of people they want. So I think that, you know, Iowa has a long history of accepting refugees, and I accept Iowa participating in that.
We have less than a minute. You have served in elected office continuously since 1959. You're 87 years old. Have you made a decision about whether you will run for another eighth term in the Senate?
I made a decision that I'm going to make an announcement in September, October, November, because 1 year to campaign is enough.
Okay, but you, in your mind, you have made that decision, you just haven't shared it yet.
No, I'm in the process of making that decision.
Okay, very good. Senator Grassley, thank you very much for joining us this half hour.
And thank you to your listeners, too. And go to grassley.senate.gov to keep in touch with me on the things that I'm involved here, both speeches and press releases.
Okay, good day, Senator Grassley. Thank you again for making time for it.